Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, May 13th. Pfluger, Taylor, seeking sponsors for energy future legislation. The story was written by Mellon McEwen. As the U.S. economy continues to reopen amid recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic, energy demand is expected to grow, and there is concern that supplies won't meet rising demand. Concern about energy supplies and security among Texas's representatives began earlier this year when new President Joe Biden implemented moratoriums on new oil and gas drilling permits on federal land. That prompted August Pfluger, elected to succeed Mike Conaway as representative for District 11, to file the Saving America's Energy Future Act to prevent implementation of that moratorium. Congressman Van Taylor, a fellow Republican representing District 3, which covers much of Collin County north of Dallas, has signed on as a sponsor. He told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview that efforts are ongoing to secure additional sponsors. He said he wished more Democratic legislators would sign on to sponsor the bill. Quote, "This is an important piece of legislation," he said. "We need to ensure U.S. energy independence, and we need to develop oil where we find it," end quote. The moratoriums raise concerns about U.S. energy security, he said. "Energy security and independence is important because they support the economy. Every dollar spent on foreign energy is lost tax revenue, impedes job creation, and the development of new technology," Taylor pointed out. Quote, "Every American needs reliable energy, whether it's driving to work, buying products shipped across the state, or turning the lights on," he said. "America needs energy independence, and there's not a reason not to have it," end quote. Taylor says he believes the moratoriums issued in January are the beginning of a number of decisions by the Biden administration that are hostile to oil and gas. In filing his legislation, Pfluger noted that approximately 25% of the nation's oil and gas production is from federal lands, he pointed out, and a moratorium on new drilling would directly impact Midland and Odessa. A number of producers headquartered in the two cities are also active in southeast New Mexico, he said. A study by the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas looked at the impact of possible changes to oil leasing and permitting requirements on federal lands. Authors Garrett Golding and Kunal Patel, both business economists in the bank's research department, found those changes could prompt a realignment of Permian Basin activity between Texas and New Mexico. With half of New Mexico's oil and natural gas production coming from federal acreage in the Permian, quote, "If there's restrictions on New Mexico permits, we'll see a shift. We'll see less activity on New Mexico acreage, and employment will shift to Texas," Patel told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. The two established three scenarios, including a reference case, assuming an average price of $50 for West Texas Intermediate. Under the reference case, which serves as the benchmark and assumes little change in leasing, permitting, and drilling compared to the first quarter 2021 levels, Permian Basin production would rise from 4.3 million barrels a day today to 5.3 million barrels a day in December of 2025. New Mexico production would grow from 1 million barrels to 1.5 million barrels in that time. Under a hybrid case with no new federal leasing, but leaseholders continuing to receive drilling permits, under more rigorous reviews that slow approvals and create a costlier operating environment beginning in 2022, Permian production would rise to 5.1 million barrels, while New Mexico production would rise to 1.1 million barrels a day, as operators gradually relocate drilling rigs and completion crews to non-federal locations. Under the most restrictive case, no new federal permits or extensions would be granted beginning in 2023, when most recently issued permits expire, and the existing freeze adversely affects production near-term due to lack of approvals in permit modifications and pipeline rights-of-way. Permian production would still rise from 4.8 million barrels a day, but New Mexico production would fall to 700,000 barrels a day. In crafting the study, the two assumed a standard three-well pad requiring on average 240 workers. In the hybrid and restrictive cases, between 3,500 and 6,600 drilling and completions workers will not be needed in New Mexico from now through year-end 2025, while Texas will require between 5,400 and 7,400 more workers. Patel told the Reporter Telegram he and Golding see the more moderate hybrid case as the most likely scenario to emerge. Quote, earnings calls we've heard seem to indicate that it is operators understanding that will be the framework. They expect to continue operating. There will be some ramping up of activity to get permits sooner, said Golding. Patel said while it was easy to estimate the impact on those directly employed in drilling, completions, and workover operations, it was harder to estimate the impact on those who support the industry, from hotel and restaurant workers to housing to retail. If moratoriums on oil and gas activity on federal lands continue, Patel said, quote, we definitely expect field jobs to move across the border. There will be an impact on associated jobs. We also suspect a lot of those jobs were held up by the oil and gas industry despite the broader slowdown in the broader economy, end quote. Continue to fight. Taylor says Fasken will file appeal if NRC approves high-level nuclear waste in Andrews. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. Fasken Oil and Ranch is prepared to continue fighting Waste Control Specialist's plan to store high-level nuclear waste in Andrews County, Director of Oil and Gas Development Tommy Taylor said Wednesday. WCS currently has a facility in Andrews County to store low-level waste and applied for a license in 2016 to temporarily store high-level waste there before it would be moved to a permanent repository. A U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission panel recommended approving the application in May 2020. Quote, we're not going to sit back and let this happen, Taylor said during a Midland County Republican Women's Luncheon. He said Fasken Oil will petition the NRC and file an appeal in Washington, D.C. if the application by WCS is approved. Last week, Representative Tom Craddock killed a bill co-authored by Representative Brooks Landgraf that sought to ban the storage of high-level waste in Texas. Opponents of the bill said it didn't have the power to prevent the federal government from storing high-level waste. Taylor said other issues with House Bill 2692 included the tax cut it would have given to WCS, as well as doing away with containerization for Class A waste and some contract negotiations, which he said would have lessened safety regulations. He said he hoped killing that bill would make WCS, quote, come to the table and say we want to operate a good low-level site, end quote. Once a permit is issued to WCS to store high-level waste, it will be, quote, very difficult to stop the process, Taylor said. He criticized the federal government for looking for temporary solutions rather than developing a permanent repository and called the casks WCS is seeking to store with high-level waste inside Chernobyl in a can and, quote, the most toxic material mankind has ever created, end quote. Taylor also said the lack of a permanent storage site will put the nuclear power industry at risk. Quote, we don't need to let the pressure off our government. We need to solve this problem, he said. Additionally, at Wednesday's MCRW meeting, James Beecham, president of the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, gave an update on upcoming road projects. Some notable projects he discussed were the completion of Loop 250 and the construction of a corridor on Yukon Road that were connected to Midland International Airport. Beecham also spoke about an 8 to 10 year project on Interstate 20 that would expand the highway from 4 to 6 lanes and construct new overpasses. House passes Craddock's HJR 82 to fund Grow Texas. Legislation that would generate revenue for energy-producing areas passed the Texas House on Wednesday and is headed to the Senate. House Joint Resolution 82, co-sponsored by State Representative Tom Craddock, passed overwhelmingly Wednesday. The item brings state money generated by oil and gas production back to the Permian Basin and other energy-producing hotbeds. These funds would be returned to where they originated to make improvements to expand roads and invest in infrastructure needed in the energy-producing areas, according to a press release from Craddock's office. HJR 82 would create the Generate Recurring Oil Wealth for Texas Fund, or GROW. The fund does not create or raise taxes. Rather, it secures the existing state revenue paid by oil and gas severance taxes for specific reinvestment in the Texas oil patch. The money could be used for roads, education, broadband, law enforcement, and many other of the required needs in these energy communities. Quote, energy-producing communities in Texas sacrifice so much to generate the revenue needed to support all Texans, Craddock said in a press release. Continuing the quote, GROW is just a small step toward investing in these communities and their future success, end quote.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, May 13th, 2021. Culture. Tall City Blues Fest postponed for another year by J.C. Lewis. Tall City Blues Fest has postponed the 2021 event. According to a press release shared last month, the festival organizers were sad to deliver this news, but preserving the festival-going experience is at the forefront of their values. Creating the festival-going experience or something better was not possible due to lingering concerns surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic. We realize that our patrons are ready to get out for some live music, so in lieu of being able to present the fest this year, we are planning to pitch a series of Wang Dang doodles this year and start combating the inertia of last year, said Lisa Grissom, Chief Business Development for the festival. To receive notifications when the festival announces a Wang Dang doodle, sign up for their mailing list, app.smartsheet.com/b/form/1e74bf96. MCT's latest show, When Bullfrogs Sing Opera, opens for a 2-week run. What happens when a New York City socialite's country as Cornbread and Grits sister shows up at her penthouse for a surprise visit? Anything is possible, from deceit to hijinks, and ultimately discovering what's most important in life. Midland Community Theater is reviving the popular McLaren Festival winner, When Bullfrogs Sing Opera, for its third production of the 2021 season. The show opens Friday in the Davis Theater 1 at 2000 West Wadley and continues Fridays and Saturdays through May 22nd. This production is produced in cooperation with the Midland College Drama Department. The production takes audience members to a posh penthouse in the Upper East Side of New York City. It is there that they meet Millicent, a refined socialite, getting ready for an evening with some of her prestigious society friends. Suddenly, Millicent's lowbrow baby sister, Corrine, surprises her with a visit. Mortified that her high society friends might discover that Millicent isn't as cultured as she seems, she comes up with a plan. Corrine is a devoted and talented actress, diving deeply into her latest role. What follows is 75 minutes of shenanigans as Millicent navigates the ruse for her friends, while Corrine's contagiously positive outlook on life spreads throughout the upper crust crew, including Millicent. Newcomer to MCT, but not to the stage, Alejandra Carnero is excited to take on a new show after over a year of little to no theater. "I missed performing during the pandemic," says Carnero. "I've enjoyed the teamwork that's put in by everyone. It has been a very happy experience." Carnero, who plays the Stephanie, the dreamy-eyed daughter of Millicent's high society friends, the Kuppermans, has enjoyed the experience of working with director Jane Moore. "Jane Moore is a genius. She really wants us to work as an ensemble and think like our character would think." Moore says the show is appealing because of the classic trope of mistaken identity, but with a fun twist. She said that it's the type of comedy that we all need during these times. "We all need a laugh at this point in our lives," Moore said. "It's time for everyone to get out and have a good time and just laugh." For tickets and showtimes, visit mctmidland.org or call the MCT box office at 570-4111. Cast: Millicent, Cassie Dressel. Corrine, Pam Keel. Brian, Michael Fields. Patrick, Kevin Casey. Stephanie, Alejandro Carnero. Francis, Caroline Engelstad. Andrew, Victor Lopez. MARC pays tribute to Bosecker's 30-plus years of service. MARC will host a reception Friday in honor of longtime executive director Charlotte Bosecker and her many achievements during 30-plus years of service. The community is invited to the Spectrum of Solutions, 2409 West Illinois, for the event, which is scheduled for 2 to 4 p.m. Friday. All are welcome to come and go at their leisure as MARC celebrates Bosecker's legacy. MARC has been serving the Permian Basin for more than 60 years, providing daily care and support for more than 200 individuals with intellectual developmental disabilities. Bosecker has served the people of MARC for more than 30 years. She began her career as a direct support professional and worked her way to Director of Operations and eventually Executive Director in 2011. Under Bosecker's tutelage, MARC has grown exponentially. With her direction, MARC founded its Children's Therapy Center, Spectrum of Solutions, in 2012. There, children with developmental disabilities receive a wide array of different therapies. What began as a small operation out of the MARC administration offices has now grown to occupy its own building and serves 130-plus children regularly. Continuing with her plans for MARC, Bosecker initiated a capital campaign for MARC's administration building in 2018. The campaign was able to meet its $7 million goal in 1 year. Construction is currently underway, with project completion expected summer of 2022. These highlights are just a few of the many accomplishments Bosecker has achieved in her time at MARC, according to a news release. She has built deep, strong connections with the Midland community and is a well-known name in the nonprofit world. Community calendar. Calm Aquatics Community Day. City of Midland Aquatics will hold its Community Day Saturday From 8 to 11 a.m. that day, adults interested can take advantage of six-week adult memberships for $25 and have access to all adult programs Calm offers. From 2 to 4 p.m., kids can have a fun 2 hours at the pool, take part in Calm Swim and Dive Team tryouts, and have access to discounts for junior camps and swim or dive team memberships. Events and activities. Storytime for young readers, 10 to 11 a.m. Thursday at George W. Bush Childhood Home. Victory Run and Walk with Midland Rockhounds and Gifts of Hope, 7 to 10 a.m. Saturday at Momentum Bank Ballpark. Call Gifts of Hope at 218-8714 or visit giftsofhopetx.org for more information. Midland and Odessa Young Professionals Joint Meetings, 7 p.m. Saturday. League of Women Voters, Midland Annual Meeting, 6:30 p.m. May 17th. MGMS Outdoor Market, 9 a.m. May 22nd at 602 South Main. Keys for Hope Clay Shoot Fundraiser, benefiting Gifts of Hope, June 18th at Midland Shooters Association. Windy City Golf Tournament, 8 a.m. June 18th at Hogan Park, a senior life event. Keys for Hope Dinner and Cocktails featuring dueling pianos by Felix and Fingers, June 18th at the Bush Convention Center. Call Gifts of Hope at 218-8714 or visit giftsofhopetx.org for more information. Nonprofits. Permian Basin Gives, May 18th, a one-day giving event encouraging area residents to give to nonprofits. Online at permianbasingives.org. Big Shot for CASA Clay Shoot, 8 a.m. May 22nd at Jake's Clay's. Show of Support Clay Shoot, July 30th at Windwalker Farms. Entertainment Calendar. An Evening with Vaktiv, part of the Phyllis and Bob Cowan Performing Arts Series, May 18th at Midland College. Contact the Midland College Foundation at foundation@midland.edu or call 685-45 to reserve tickets. West Texas Blowout, May 22nd at the Horseshoe. E.T. the Extraterrestrial in Concert by the Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale, 7:30 p.m. May 22nd at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $30 to $50. Cody Johnson, June 11th at the Horseshoe. Cesar Ornelas Law Mextex Family Fiesta, June 12th at Centennial Park. Celebration of the Arts 2021, July 16th through 18th at the Bush Convention Center. Regular meetings or activities. Healing Yoga for People Recuperating from Cancer, 5:30 p.m. Monday at Yoga Sanctuary, 4202 Dawn Circle.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, May 13th. Colonel James Farrell Bell, U.S. Army Reserve, retired, age 88, of Mountain Home, Arkansas, passed away on Thursday, May 6th. James was born in Joliet, Illinois, to James Charles Bell and Gwendolyn Farrell Bell on September 8, 1932. He is preceded in death by his parents, also by brother Dr. Theodore Bell and wife Sharon Best Bell. He is survived by daughters Kimberly Bell Ristow of Athens, Georgia, Catherine Bell Whitcomb of El Cajon, California, Julia Bell Naminsky of Athens, Georgia, Vicki Bell of Mountain Home, Arkansas, and son James Severin Bell of Wilcox, Arizona. James is also survived by sister Jean Bell Jenkins of Medina, Illinois. He will be greatly missed by 9 grandchildren and 12 great-grandchildren. There are no services scheduled at this time. arrangements are under the care of Roller Funeral Home. For condolences, please visit our online guestbook at www.rollerfuneralhome.com. Jimmy Moore, age 46, of Garden City, Texas, passed away Monday, May 10th. Graveside service will be at 2 p.m. Thursday, May 13th, at Belvedere Memorial Park in San Angelo, Texas. Jimmy was born January 13, 1975, in San Antonio, Texas, to May Lewis Moore and Jim Moore. He attended Midland Lee High School, developing a close group of friends held near and dear to his heart to this day. He married Sharon Johnson Moore on February 14, 1999. They spent 22 wonderful years together, raising two sons. He was preceded in death by his sister, Jamie Moore, on September 11, 2017. Jimmy is survived by his wife, Sharon, of Garden City, son, Jimmy L.J. Moore, of San Angelo, son, Joseph, and wife, Nikki McLaren, of Brooksmith, mother, May Moore, of Midland, father, Jim Moore, and wife, Brenda, of Brownwood, sister, Melissa Moore, of Midland, nephew, Dylan Hill, of Midland, nieces, Maddie Hill, of Midland, and Haley Whitney, of Lubbock. Also, he is survived by a granddaughter and many aunts, uncles, and cousins. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Susan Shepherd Kerr died on May 11th. A graveside service will be held on Friday, May 14th at 10:30 a.m. at Fairview Cemetery. Memorial service will be held on Friday, May 14th at 1 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church with Dr. Steve Shore officiating. Sue was born June 4, 1936 in Richmond, Virginia. She lived in Illinois, Massachusetts, and Tennessee before settling in Birmingham, Alabama, where she completed high school. She met her future husband, Theodore Morris Ted Kerr, while she was attending Hollins College in Roanoke, Virginia. They were married on March 30, 1957. She was preceded in death by her parents, Fayette Gleason Shepherd and Marion Clark Shepherd, and by her sister, Ann Shepherd Allen. She is survived by her husband and her sons, Theodore Morris Kerr, Jr. of San Antonio, Texas, and Charles Shepherd Kerr of Denver, Colorado, as well as several grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the First Presbyterian Church Choir Fund, 800 West Texas Avenue in Midland, 79705, Presbyterian Children's Homes and Services, Post Office Box 14088, Austin, Texas, 79714, or a charity of one's choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Hope Renee Slaughter, age 64, of Midland, passed on Friday, April 30th in Midland. A memorial service will be held Friday, May 14th at 5 p.m. at Calvary Christian Fellowship in Midland. Arrangements entrusted to American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Jesus Portillo, age 72, passed away May 7th in Midland. Services will be held for Jesus in his hometown in Mexico. He is survived by his wife, Hermelinda Portillo, his three sons and two daughters. Avalo Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home is honored to serve the Portillo family at this time. Shirley F. Watson, age 81, of Midland, passed away on May 1st. Visitation will be held from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Friday, May 14th, at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service will be Saturday, May 15th, at the Mount Calvary Missionary Baptist Church in Midland at 11 a.m. In keeping with her wishes, cremation services have been arranged. She leaves to cherish her memories two sons, Rodney Watson, Stanley Watson, two daughters, Cheryl Watson, Kelly Kendrick, all of Midland, 8 grandchildren, 13 great-grandchildren, 3 sisters, and 2 brothers. Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home is honored to serve the Watson family at this time.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, May 13th, 2021. Bueno named to new leadership role. OA News at OAOA.com. San Jacinto Principal Aaron Bueno was named an Executive Director of Leadership for Ector County ISD at a recent board workshop. Bueno will start July 1st and replace Andrea Martin, who is retiring. After an executive session, the board voted for the appointment unanimously with Board Secretary Steve Brown and Vice President Tammy Hawkins making the motion and seconding it, respectively, at Tuesday's meeting. It's an honor to be given this opportunity to serve the staff and students in ECISD, Bueno said after the meeting. The board recap said Bueno spent the past 3 years as the principal of San Jacinto Elementary School, and before that, she was the assistant principal there for 4 years. She helped lead San Jacinto from an improvement-required campus that was reconstituted to a grade of B from the Texas Education Agency. She also served 5 years in instructional coaching. Superintendent Scott Murray announced that the district would be nominating the board for the Texas School Board of the Year award. Even if we don't win, it's an honor, President Delma Avalos said. Over the next several weeks, Murray said, they will be gathering information from board members. You deserve it, Murray said. You don't often have boards that are this collaborative, that allow us to do good work. On standard attire for Burnett Elementary School, the board had questions about the process, so Murray said the item will be brought back for the regular board meeting next Tuesday. Board members who were up for election May 1st were sworn in Tuesday. Running unopposed were Brown, Abalos, and Nelson Minyard. Chris Stanley won out over challenger Jesse Christensen. In the public comment part of the meeting, Javier Ruiz, president of Ector County, Texas State Teachers Association, congratulated Stanley on his re-election to the school board. He also talked about the proposed raises for employees, federal stimulus money for public school districts, and plans to use those federal dollars to improve student achievement. Ruiz said he wanted his organization to have a voice in that planning. In his opening remarks, Murray gave trustees a brief update on some of the academic progress made this year. Looking at MAP, Measure of Academic Progress, assessments from the spring semester, district-wide scores show the median growth percentile to be a 52 overall, a 57 in math, and a 47 in reading, the board recap said. He explained that the 50th percentile represents average growth during an average school experience. Approaching 60 is remarkable. Of course, he added, this was not an average year. Broken down in more detail, the recap said data shows many ECISD students grew more in the second semester than they did in the first semester, which is the opposite of typical trends. He said there is much cause for celebration, yet still a lot of work to do to ensure students have an excellent educational experience every day. Trustees received a report from the Transportation Department. A staff of more than 150 operates and maintains a fleet of 185 buses and 10 SUVs used for student and staff travel. Using money approved by voters in the 2018 tax ratification election, the department has purchased 29 new buses and has leased to own another 30, putting 59 new buses in rotation since the TRE, the recap said. ECISD buses travel more than 1.5 million miles each year just running routes to and from school, 6,200 students. Another 300,000 are covered for extracurricular activities, and the district spends about $670,000 for fuel each year. This year, due to COVID, the number of passengers on buses has been limited, and the district increased bus sanitizing and hand sanitizing for all riders. The department is recommending the addition of live GPS on buses to help with routing and with safety. If adopted, the GPS app would allow parents to confirm their child is on the bus and to be able to track the bus as it moves through town. Adding Wi-Fi to trip buses is another project the department would like to pursue in the future, the recap said. The board also heard a report on the improvement plans for Nimitz Middle School. Nimitz was rated MET standard by the state until receiving a D rating in 2018-19. Because of the pandemic, accountability ratings have been suspended since then. Showing end-of-year MAP data, student benchmark tests given three times per year, Nimitz students showed growth beyond expectations in both math and English language arts in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. The use of professional learning communities, PLCs, professional development for school leaders, and the use of the opportunity culture model are ways Nimitz is growing professionally and improving its work for students, the recap said. In his legislative update, Murray told trustees there is a process involved in applying for ESSER 3 funds, $55.9 million for ECISD, and ECISD has started it. He added there is still no word on ESSER 2 money, though it is evident that some of the money is being built into proposed bills. Murray said he would not be surprised if a final decision is not made during this legislative session. He added, HB 4545 was voted down, and he felt that was good because it contained a lot of restrictions on local decision-making, and new accountability discussions could mean look-back consequences for schools who were rated a D or F as far back as 2015, the recap said. On the net, tinyurl.com/67mffxyr. Recognized. Congratulations, Nursing Employee of the Year 2020-2021, Alan Pitt. Photo by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Ector County Independent School District presented Ector College Prep Success Academy's school nurse, Alan Pitt, Center, with a $250 check from Education Foundation and a gift bag from ECISD at the 2020-2021 School Nurse of the Year Surprise Celebration Wednesday morning at George H.W. Bush New Tech, Odessa. ECISD honors Nurse of the Year by Ruth Campbell, RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. When he arrived at George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa Wednesday morning, Alan Pitt had no idea what awaited him, but it was a pleasant surprise. He was recognized as the Ector County ISD's School Nurse of the Year. Pitt, who is based at Ector College Prep Success Academy, received a large placard with his honor on it, a $250 gift card from the Education Foundation, an ECISD swag bag, and gift cards for burritos. He plans to retire at the end of this year. Wednesday was School Nurse Appreciation Day. "I am overwhelmed," Pitt said. He added that he was very surprised and did not expect this recognition to come his way. "There are many other nurses more deserving than me, but I appreciate the honor," Pitt added. "This is the end of Pitt's 20th year with the district. He has been at Ector for the past 4 years. He was at Permian High School for 14 years and split time between Burnett Elementary and Wilson and Young and Bonham Middle Schools. A native Odessan, Pitt earned his nursing degree at Odessa College. He decided on school nursing because, at the time, my wife was studying to become a teacher. She was in the process of certification. We wanted to be able to have the same work schedule, and it was a good opportunity," Pitt said. He and his wife have 4 children and 6 grandchildren. Director of Nursing Services Becky Rhodes said Pitt is very deserving of the award. "He is quiet and calm in the chaos. He's a great mentor to our new nurses, and he's just an all-around really great nurse," Rhodes said. On the net, TINYURL.COM/25SPX6C8. Active shooter bill heading to governor's desk. OANews@OAOA.com. Austin. House Bill 103, filed by State Representative Brooks Landgraf, R. Odessa, to create the Texas Active Shooter Alert System, passed out of the Texas Senate with unanimous support on Wednesday. Landgraf's bill was passed by the Texas House of Representatives last month, so the measure now heads to Governor Greg Abbott's desk, the final stage of the legislative process. "I'm thankful to my colleagues in the House and Senate, especially Senator Judith Zaffarini, who represents Sutherland Springs, for the unwavering support for this necessary policy," Landgraf stated in the news release. HB 103 did not receive a single negative vote at any stage of the legislative process. "Texans have spoken. Our state needs the active shooter alert system required by the Lila Hernandez Act." Landgraf crafted HB 103, the Lila Hernandez Act, after working with constituents and families of victims from the August 31st, 2019 mass shooting in Odessa and Midland. Lila Hernandez, a 15-year-old Odessa high school student, was the youngest victim killed that tragic day. Lila's mother, Joanna Leifa, provided powerful testimony in support of the bill at the Texas Capitol, explaining how an active shooter alert system could have saved Lila's life. "We can never replace the lives we lost over Labor Day weekend in 2019, Landgraf stated in the release, "but we believe that fewer Texans would have perished if this system had been in place at the time, and we are hopeful implementing the alert system now will save lives in the future." HB 103 would require the Texas Department of Public Safety to develop and implement the active shooter alert system. The alerts are intended to be issued quickly via SMS text and other available communications to the public in proximity to an active shooter situation. Landgraf has described this bill as a way to save lives and prevent mass violence while protecting the constitutional rights of law-abiding Texans. City Council approves erosion control project. OANews@OAOA.com. The Odessa Council voted unanimously to hire Midland-based Onyx Contractors, LLC, for $105,000 to oversee an erosion control project at Memorial Gardens during Tuesday's City Council meeting. Odessa Parks and Recreation Director Steve Patton previously told the council that the project would address a problem with the drainage culvert under 42nd Street that enters Memorial Gardens near the northwest corner of the park site. "The swift current flowing through the culvert into the holding pond area has eroded the soil around the footings of the West Pedestrian Bridge," Patton explained. The project would encase the bridge footings with a concrete wall and protect the footings from further erosion. The council also voted to renew the city's 2-year bank depository agreement with BBVA USA for $69,328. The city has been using BBVA USA since 2016, city officials said. As the city's financial institution, it oversees all of the city's deposits, withdrawals, and other banking services routinely provided any banking customers, City Manager Michael Marrero said. Council on Tuesday also approved the hiring of Onyx contractors to replace metal roofs on pavilions and restroom building at Woodson Park and Pavilion at Floyd Gwynn Park for $43,835. Following a closed session, council voted to appoint Keith Kidd as a new associate municipal court judge. City officials on Tuesday and Wednesday refused to release any further information about Kidd, including his salary, start date, or any background information. 467 days. For 467 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 17,289 total cases, 370 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 1 student, 1 staff. Midland County, 17,541 total cases, 268 deaths. Texas, 2,920,043 total cases, 50,719 deaths. U.S. cases, 32,608,287 total confirmed and 580,073 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Quick hits. Good Vibrations. Odessa High School's Bronco Legacy Choir will be putting out some Good Vibrations for its spring show at 7:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday at the OHS Performing Arts Center. The show will include singing, dancing, and skits. Tickets are $15 for the prime seating, which is the center section, $10 for all other seats for adults, and $5 for students and children. To get tickets, visit ohschoir.luds.com. Spring Book Item Drop-Off. A spring book item drop-off has been scheduled from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Saturday at the parking lot at Barbara Jordan Elementary, 9400 Rainbow Drive. The City of Odessa Code Enforcement, Solid Waste Division, and Street Department will be there and will unload your bulky items for free. Residential items only must reside in the city limits. No tree limbs. For more information, call Code Enforcement at 432-335-4680. Car, Truck, Motorcycle Show. The CAF Desert Squadron will present the 6th Annual Fun in the Sun Car, Truck, and Motorcycle Show July 17th, next to the fire station, 411 East Yukon Road. Registration begins at 9 a.m., judging at 11 a.m., and awards at 3 p.m. There will be sirloin burgers, hot dogs, and drinks for sale. Trophies will be presented in first and second place, best in paint, best in engine, best in interior, and best in show. Registration is $30. Call or email mail at 432-559-8961 or emelh55@gmail.com. From staff reports. Closing prices. Posted, $62.56. Futures, $66.08. Natural gas, $2.969. Benchmark U.S. rose 80 cents to $66.08 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Man charged with assaulting pregnant woman. OA News at OAOA.com. A 32-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly assaulted a pregnant woman. Michael Anthony Sines was charged with assault of a pregnant woman, family violence, a third-degree felony. The reported assault happened at 12:31 p.m. May 5th in the 800 block of 19th Street, an Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit stated. Officers reportedly made contact with Sines and Brittany Benavides. Benavides stated that while arguing with Sines about his unemployment, he assaulted her. Benavides stated that Sines threw her around, which caused a cut to her right knee and a large red swollen scratch to her inner right thigh, the affidavit stated. Benavides stated that Sines also grabbed her by her face and held her down to the floor inside their residence, which caused four red swollen scratches to the left side of her face. Officers reportedly saw all injuries. Sines was read his Miranda rights, which he waived, and admitted to holding her face down. Benavides reported that she was 8 weeks pregnant. Sines stated he knew she was pregnant when he assaulted her. Sines was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He had one bond totaling $15,000 and posted bail on May 8th, jail records show. Energy Independence Act passes out of Texas House. OA News at OAOA.com. Austin. Legislation by State Representative Brooks Landgraf, R. Odessa, to stop the implementation of any overreaching new federal regulations on oil and gas production in Texas passed out of the Texas House on Tuesday. House Bill 1683, dubbed the Texas Energy Independence Act, passed with the support of 110 out of 150 Texas state representatives. I filed HB 1683 to protect the livelihood of my fellow West Texans, the hardest working men and women on the face of the earth, Landgraf stated in a news release. But as is often the case, what is good for the Permian Basin is good for the state as a whole. The Texas Energy Independence Act ensures taxpayer dollars collected on the state level will not be expended to enforce unnecessary federal oil and gas regulations. House Bill 1683 prohibits Texas state agencies and officials from contracting with or providing assistance to any federal agency or official regarding the enforcement of a federal statute, order, rule, or regulation regulating oil and gas operations if the regulation is not already in existing state law. Our way of life is under attack, but those who wish to stifle production fail to recognize the micro and macro importance of what we do out here. So many things that are necessary to daily life, including everything from baby diapers and children's toys to car tires and cell phones, are a direct result of the hydrocarbons we pull from the ground. HB 1683 protects Texas jobs and American freedoms. It really is as simple as that, Landgraf stated in the press release. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, May 13th, 2021. Obituaries. Mary Marjorie Baxter, Odessa. Mary Marjorie Baxter passed away on May 11th, 2021 in Odessa, Texas. She was born on April 25th, 1923 in Bonham, Texas, to Maurice and Helen Miller. Margie is survived by three children, Susie Pease, Jim of Pineville, Louisiana, William J. Baxter, Tony of Bremond, Texas, and Jan Drescher, Max of Shallowwater, Texas, seven grandchildren, 16 great-grandchildren, her sister Linda Peter of Bay City, Texas, and four nieces and two nephews. A celebration of her life will be held at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home, 601 North Allegheny Avenue, on Saturday, May 15, 2021, at 2 p.m., followed by a private burial. Memorials may be sent to Connections Christian Church, 4241 Tanglewood Lane, Odessa, Texas, 79762, and Heart to Heart Hospice, 223 West Wall Street, Suite 220, Midland, Texas, 79701. Curtis Lynn Chatham, Keller. Curtis Lynn Chatham passed away Friday, May 7th, at his home in Keller. He was born May 19, 1934, in Baird, Texas, to parents Marcellus D. Pete and Millie Chatham. Curtis was preceded in death by his infant daughter, Leslie Ann Chatham, his parents Pete and Millie Chatham, his brother Russell Chatham, and his sisters, Aline Hodson, Jimmy Bailey Burnett, and Mamie Laverne Austin. He is survived by his wife, Marilyn Chatham, daughter Christy Taylor, John, son Greg Chatham, grandsons Trevor Taylor, Maggie Joe, and Travis Taylor, great-granddaughter Mary Ann Taylor, as well as a nephew, Jim Francisco, and nieces, Mary Lynn Patterson and Dixie Scott, and their extended families. A celebration of life service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, May 15th, at First Baptist Church, Keller, with visitation following the service. Kurt requested that his body be donated to UT Southwestern Medical Center for medical research. A marker recognizing his life and death will be placed in the Chatham family plot in the Baird Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, it is suggested that memorials be given to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, www.llk.org. Mary Grace Sarles Graham. Sarles is spelled S-A-R-L-E-S. Marble Falls. Mary Mimi Grace Graham, 67, of Marble Falls, passed away on May 5, 2021, in Marble Falls, Texas. Mimi was born to Harvey Leslie and Mary Sarles, August 4, 1953, in Houston, Texas. Mimi was preceded in death by her beloved husband, Dennis, and her sister, Kathy Sarles Irvin. She is survived by son and daughter-in-law, Dennis and Christy Graham, and son, Eric Graham. She has two grandchildren, Hannah and Andrew Graham, and one grand dog, Bane Graham. She also leaves to cherish her memory her brother and sister-in-law, Les and Dana Sarles, and her sister and brother-in-law, Karen and Tony Parker. The memorial services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, May 15, 2021, at Clements Wilcox Funeral Home in Marble Falls. Memorials may be given to the American Heart Association in lieu of flowers. The Graham family wishes to extend our sincere thanks and gratitude to all friends and family. Death Notices. Noricia Ruth Sims, Odessa. Noricia Ruth Sims, 82, of Odessa, died Tuesday, May 11, 2021, in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 11 a.m. Friday, May 14, 2021, at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. Arrangements are by Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Midland. Linda C. Edmiston, Odessa. Linda C. Edmiston, 74, of Odessa, died Friday, May 7, 2021, in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 10 a.m., May 14, 2021, at Sunset Memorial Gardens, with burial to follow. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.